What's going on, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to another episode of The Naturalist Capitalist. This is our second roundtable we're going to be doing, and we're not going to be talking about Christianity and atheism all the time. We wanted to kind of do this every couple weeks because we're all Mises Caucus libertarians from different corners of the country. But we're calling this the Capitalist Communion. And right now, Will and I both have some Rabbit Eye blueberry wine. Jacob was supposed to have it, but the, you know, I don't know if
Jameson,
he's up there.
There you go.
It'll do.
You can look in the description and right under Will Bell's Twitter, I've also got where you can buy some Rabbit Eye blueberry wine. But the next time we do this, all four of us will be drinking.
Yeah, the free market has failed. I've completely lost my faith in capitalism after attempting to get that overnighted to me, and then UPS was a bunch of idiots, and long story short is like it's stuck in processing, and it's like, so it's probably like literally within 5 miles of my house, but it's just lost on somebody's truck or in the back of some room. So
yeah, me and you both can track it, and like we can look at it is on a truck or something somewhere.
Well, when I tracked it, they were just like, oh, sorry, there's been some kind of processing error. And it's like, it'll get to you Monday, probably. I was like, oh, great. Thanks.
Yeah, we tried to overnight mine as well, and it would have been like $500 to get
Holy.
It.
Holy. Yeah, I thought mine was bad.
That was crazy. I guess y'all still use like the Pony Express out there.
Yeah, that's definitely it.
Yeah. So are you back to a Bernie supporter again, Jacob, or what's the deal now you've given up on capitalism?
I don't know. I mean, the problem is Bernie Sanders, I'm too red-pilled to know, like, he's not a real socialist. You know what I mean? So I don't know if anyone in America is. I mean,
I was going to say, is there such a thing as a real socialist? The problem with socialism is everyone is a capitalist. That's what I've always said. Like, you know, I mean, no, people are like, Bernie Sanders isn't socialist enough, or AOC isn't. And it's like, yeah, no shit. That's the whole idea. That's the problem with socialism. That's why it doesn't work. That's what I've always said, at least.
I mean, I really think that we need to model ourselves after Israel. You know what I mean? I mean, they have that perfect blend of apartheid and, you know, socialism, but only for Jews. And, you know, I mean, I think it's just a beautiful thing.
Well, who's going to tell them, guys? Who's going to tell them?
I saw that. they know how to outsource their production to another country. So they have the capitalism take place in another country so they can live off the socialism in their own country. That's what we've got to figure out how to do, I think. We just do the opposite. So
yeah, I saw your quote tweet about Israel on my post about Rittenhouse.
Oh yeah, I have been given the keys to the Utah Libertarian Mises Caucus account on Twitter, and I talked to them today, and I was like, I know I can be like way too over the line, like way too based, and I won't do that on this. And they were like, oh no, but you know, be based still, like don't be ridiculous, but be based. So
Jeremy Kaufman going to get into shit posting wars now from different state affiliate accounts?
See, I did that on my old account with the Massachusetts Mises Caucus. We got into the Israel tweets. I don't know if any of you guys saw that exchange. That was pretty insane. We got pretty edgy, which I don't know how I survived that and then got nuked for what I did get nuked on. That was whatever, but I don't know. It's stupid.
Take notes on what you did get canceled for and adapt. You know what I'm saying? Like, do it like, what would Michael Malice do? Like, would he use a verb like that?
Well, see, Michael Malice is a perfect, like, he shitposts, but in a way that it goes completely undetected.
Shitposts right to the worst, biggest people, like hardcore, but you can't, it's like he does it in an untouchable way.
There always has to be like a veneer of plausible deniability to be like, oh no, I didn't say that. Look, read the words. Just read them. They don't say that. But then it's like, it's obvious that, you know, that it's a shitpost, but it's just, he has such a way with words that it's, you know, it's easy to get away with. But But yeah, that was my biggest, because like I've been in the Mises Caucus, I think longer than you have, Reed. And, you know, going back to like the New Hampshire scandal and all that, I was never offended by any of their tweets. I was just like, guys, like, this is kind of like a scorched earth policy that's going to like be really cool for about 6 months. And I think I almost nailed that timeline perfectly. I think almost it's been 6 months since the New Hampshire stuff went viral.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was talking with them today and I said, you know, I agree. Like nothing they said offended me, and it's totally stuff I'd tweet from my personal account. But even I think there's a line for an official libertarian caucus account. Like there's some things that's like, okay, that's too much. I don't know. That's my opinion at least.
Yeah. Especially if you're in like an official position, I think that especially in Montana, a lot of these guys are Republicans who will pretend to be offended about certain things. So kind of have to ride that line.
Yeah.
So everyone needs to go follow the Mises Caucus, Utah, Pennsylvania, and Montana page, because Jacob, Reed, and I run those accounts.
And eventually Georgia, once Will, you know, gets caught up and stops, like,
what is my pathway there?
Like, is there literally volunteer, like literally to be fair, I'll just to make sure, like, I'm not the only person on the Pennsylvania account. We got a team of like five or six guys, and I probably tweet the least from that account. I do more retweeting on that account than coming up with original content. But the guys who run it are pretty good. I just, you know, probably once a week I'll get on there and retweet a bunch of shit, and, you know, maybe share a link or two. I save most of my best ideas for my personal account, but I do have the keys to it. So
yeah, we only have like two organizers in Montana, so really no one else can do it, but I'm also retweeting a bunch of stuff there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there a Georgia party or a Georgia caucus?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is. And I've joined it, and kind of there's a couple guys that are organizers. I've been kind of communicating with them on Discord. I'm real new to Discord, so it's kind of hard, but I'm getting used to it. And but like things like the Mises Caucus Twitter account, I'm not sure if it's anybody connected to them or anything. It looks like somebody made one, made a few tweets, and then forgot about it. So I don't know.
Yeah, sometimes depending on the state, there's almost, I tell Michael Heist this a lot. I was like, sometimes we're too decentralized. Like, we'll literally have people who are just going off on their own and doing things. And I think, was it, I forget what state, it might have been Utah before Liam got there. Oh, yeah, because like they had created a Mises Caucus account that wasn't an official one. And made some, like, they weren't like to me offensive, but they were just like really bad tweets. That was like 2 months ago or so, which then we on the national team stepped in and put a stop to that, because we were like, you know, I mean, like, it's like, listen, if you're gonna shit post, at least shit post for a good cause. Theirs was like shit posting in a way that just like punched themselves in the face and put shit all over their face, and it was just like that's not helpful. So I can't remember what they said. It was
something about closed borders, and it was the Utah one. Because I remember asking Ice about running it, and he said, yeah, we had to take the keys away because the guy running it wasn't, which is funny, because whoever was running it, like back in June or something, he messaged me saying, hey, if you ever want to run this account, here's the account info. And I just never ended up doing it. And then finally I was like, oh, I sort of want to do that. And this was before my big account was banned, but I went and tried to look for the message and realized I couldn't find it, and then realized the account was nuked, and then talked to Michael Heist. But now I'm running it, so it's going to be based. Don't worry.
I'm looking forward to it.
Prior to that one. So
you have to beat the John McCain's brain tumor. I mean, that's still my number one. As far as the Mises Caucus Twitter people that they've crafted so far, I don't know if anyone's come close to that yet.
I say just copy it verbatim next time Meghan McCain says something stupid. Bam, right under.
There's a New Hampshire that got child labor laws trending.
Yeah.
They did both that and the John McCain's brain tumor. They were impressive.
My business is built on the back of child labor. So, so I was very pro that that tweet. The reeing that I saw from libertarians about that disheartened me.
I mean, there was a lot of people upset about that. And I was like, okay, so it was very blunt and there was no like follow up and explanation from them right away. And so I was kind of like, maybe it wasn't the most effective messaging of all time. But at the same time, there was a lot of other, like once they got trending, there was a lot of libertarians out there who were making really good arguments and really good points about it. So to me, I was like, I always kind of feel like, and I think here in the Mises Caucus, we do a good job at that. We're really good at doing like a good cop, bad cop routine. Like the shit posters are like that bad cop and they get everybody pissed off and riled up. But then they're paying attention. So like we reel them in with the outrage. And then we have a bunch of people who aren't shit posters who are really good on the philosophy and on explaining things and providing that nuance. And then there's people who come in that at first they're outraged and then, oh, this makes sense. So it's actually, I think, really effective. It's just you have to be able to have a low enough time preference to like ride through that initial wave of controversy.
Yeah, because I came in defense of that and I made the argument just about like in a lot of these countries, if there are child labor laws, there will be the kids will end up in prostitution or something like that. And I even had leftists reaching out to me saying like, yeah, you're absolutely right on that.
Yeah. So what do you guys think about Rittenhouse? I think isn't there supposed to be a verdict this coming week? Aren't they closing on Tuesday? I think that's the schedule that's set up.
Yeah, I know the defense closed their case. So yeah, I mean, it should be soon. I had not, so like I paid, so I looked a lot into it when the event first happened. And then since then, I really hadn't been following it up until like the past 2 weeks. And then I was watching probably every day at work, like all the stuff going on, the live in the court and I was trying to remove my bias from it just to watch it and just be like, okay, like, let me get our feeling on this kid. Let me get an idea of the circumstances and try to, not just knee-jerk react into what like all my friends and allies are saying. I want to come to the conclusion myself. The only
That's
critical
not how thing you're supposed to do it, man.
I know.
You're supposed to decide what you think and then sift through the evidence and be like, oh, that doesn't line up. I'm just gonna
I only do that with my religion. No, I'm just I will say like my initial reactions were a little bit mixed. But then I had to separate my personal feelings from the facts. My personal feelings are coming from that of like being a father and thinking it was really dumb to send a 17-year-old kid with a gun by himself into this situation. And I still feel that way. But that's kind of for me, it's not that I'm trying to blame him because it's kind of the same thing as like, I wouldn't want my daughter to be alone at night going to different clubs and drinking random drinks and stuff and not knowing who she's with. That doesn't mean that if something happened to her that like she deserved it and that she did anything wrong. It's just like, it's not wise. And, from a parental standpoint, it's just like, I want people to make good decisions for their own personal safety. And so there's that element to it, but as far as just the legality of the case and just was it self-defense or not? I mean, even the biggest Lauberts out there this past week have had to like backpedal and go, okay, it was self-defense, but he's still a piece of shit. It's like, well, that doesn't matter. He could be the biggest piece of shit in the world, but all we're trying to decide here was it legitimate self-defense or not? And does he deserve to have the rest of his life ruined by, serving, probably life in jail if he was found guilty? And there's just no objective way that you can say that that's the case. It was clearly, clearly self-defense in my opinion. And I think, his only mistake was more just like it would have been wiser to not be traveling alone. It would have been better. Like, you know, I've showed up to protests before and stuff, and even showed up in opposition to protests before armed, but I've done it with a group of people and we all stick together for safety. So I think Rittenhouse, you know, we can certainly criticize, you know, like, I, you know, I don't think like, cause like from what I understand, like his mom drove him there or something. And I'm just like, I don't know. Like, I can't imagine I would drive my 17-year-old son, you know, with a weapon, you know, like, I don't care about the crossing state lines or any of that. That's stupid arguments. I just think that I wouldn't have put him in that situation, or at the very least, if I was going to, I would be there with him. You know what I mean? I wouldn't want to leave my 17-year-old son by himself. But to me, it's clearly self-defense. And
I think on the like his mom taking him there, wasn't it like, so they live like 20 minutes away. I did just hear somebody say like his dad lived in the community. I just saw somebody say that. I'm not positive on it. And then I also think it was like his mom might have dropped him off at his friend's house, who was with their father that like trained with them with guns and that kind of thing. And it was his gun, or maybe it was like Kyle's gun that he held for him until he was 18. Something of that nature.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I don't have any really big problem with that. And I see people in the comments trying to correct me. I know he showed up with other people. Like, he had his one friend, like, something Black. The guy's last name was Black with him. But at the time of the actual shooting, he had taken off and was by himself. Yeah. So that was my... Like, when you show up with people, you should try to stick together. Mm-hmm. It's not good to be traveling alone at any point.
Yeah, I think what's really interesting about this, and not just this case, a lot of other cases, is people are trying to determine the character or the history or the political positions of the person in question. It's like, who cares? Like, even if he had done something bad in the past, like even if there were reasons to think this is the type of thing he would want to do and that he actually wanted to go there to start fights, what matters is the actual circumstances of the situation that took place. Like, I mean, everyone's trying to apply all these outside forces that have nothing to do with what actually happened. And I just think that's really annoying. That always happens. It happened with the George Floyd case too. Like, they're trying to show like how bad Derek Chauvin was or how bad George Floyd was. And it's like, okay, we're literally trying to figure out what happened when Chauvin was kneeling on his back. Like, that's what matters. And I don't know. It just always gets lost in the weeds over how good a person was this guy and how good a person were the other people involved and what were his political positions and, you know, was he a nice guy? And that just shouldn't matter at all, in my opinion.
Yeah, I posted something about it, and this leftist from my school reached out to me, and she was like, why are you defending a white supremacist? I'm like, well, let's pay attention to the case here. First of all, he killed two white people. And right. Then, like, are we putting him on trial for being whatever you claim he is or whatever ideology he has? Or is it because he shot people and he was in a situation where he needed to defend himself? Like, it's just pretty ridiculous. And I think the biggest thing here is, like, why is the media magnifying this particular story? Like, there's so many other lawsuits right now. Like, I think Ghislaine Maxwell is on trial right now. And then so is Ahmaud Arbery, the guy who got shot by the vigilante white guys.
Yeah, that case is like an hour away from my house. Like, it's a big deal down here. But corporate news ain't really talking about it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, man, that, you know, that's like the... That one's rough. That one is a rough case. And I mean, like, I look at it and that kid, I hope them dudes get put.
Did he cut out for you guys too?
Yeah, he cut out for me too.
Yeah.
It's the FBI decided that Will's not allowed to talk about the Ahmaud Arbery case. Yeah, no, I certainly think that case is a little, you know, from my memory, a little. Oh, there he's back. You cut off right before you got to make your statement.
Yeah, yeah. Hey guys. I just honestly, like, I just I hope justice is served in this case, because like watching that one, it's pretty gross. I saw like the father, the dude that shot him, is connected to the police in some fashion, and they definitely kind of helped them, or it seems that they helped them kind of like make this a real smooth like case right at first. It's a real gross looking situation. When I try to like around here, it does seem like everybody reasonable is on the case of like, these guys are assholes and they need to, and justice needs to be served. I forget their names, but you turn on corporate news and it looks like white America has picked an all white jury to uphold some kind of Confederate mandate on this obvious lynching, which I thought the definition of lynching was a hanging, but now we're like, they're changing the definition of it. So it's real hard to like really make the argument. It's real hard to just like make any opinions on it, because like they're going so hard for claiming like, just, we're all racist down here and our courts are racist and we're gonna like do something. So you want to sit there and like be like, hold on, just wait for justice. But then I don't know, we'll see what happens. I don't want to speak too much on it because I'm not like following it super closely.
Yeah, I haven't looked into it since it happened either. But I remember when it first happened, there was a lot of people, even in like my Mises caucus circles, who were taking the side of the people who shot him, just because like, oh well, he, you know, he was trespassing, and I was just like, I don't know. And I mean, it was like, I feel like sometimes in you know, like in the Mises caucus, we're bringing people in and they'll they've only consumed like the surface level as far as like the philosophy. And when you go deep into anarcho-capitalist and libertarian philosophy, like, you know, yeah, it is about property rights, but there's also like, you know, reciprocity in enforcement of property rights. That's really important. And like, you know, it's like, even if they would have caught him in the act doing it, I'm not sure that would really justify just gung-ho, you know, going after him, but let alone to go like, you know, see the footage and then go in their pickup truck and go driving around to find him. And then, you know, pointing a gun at him the way they did, to me, it just seems silly. You know, like, I'm an anarchist, but you know, what's that? There's that cliche saying anarchy means no rulers and not no rules. And it's like, I'm not an anarchist because I want to live in a chaotic, you know, like gung-ho, might makes right sort of society. I actually do believe in, you know, what I like to call a polycentric legal system. And I think that an anarcho-capitalist society would actually, there'd be a lot of private law based in contract and insurance companies and, you know, all sorts of things. And we don't have time to go into like, you know, all the nitty gritty, but the point is like, that kind of behavior is going to be very strongly disincentivized in an anarchist capitalist society, in my opinion. It's not, you know, we shouldn't, like, it's one thing if someone breaks into your house in the middle of the night while you're there. It's a completely different situation than I have footage of somebody who walked through my house and I don't see that he took anything, and now I'm going to go chase him down and gun him down. Even if he had taken something, that's not the preferred way for seeking, yeah, right, resolution. Like, even if they like, oh, he took my TV, it's like, okay, is it the wisest and is it a reciprocal response to then go find where he lives and break into his house to steal your TV back at gunpoint? Like, that is not like, yeah, if that's what anarcho-capitalism was, I wouldn't be for it. I don't think that's how property rights are enforced.
I feel you. And just to be clear, I think I keep forgetting the kid's name, Ahmed Aubrey, but I think he was
Ahmed.
he was allegedly, he was either walking through the community or something, and he was like kind of like hanging around a house that was in construction. And like, as a teenager, yeah, I've done that as a teenager for sure. Like, and there was not any crazy rednecks chasing me down. Like, they chased the boy down, evidently. Like, there's video of at least two vehicles. I hear one was brandishing a Confederate flag license plate, which looks terrible. Like, that shit is gross. But yeah, like you say, sure, if the kid was stealing a TV and they were holding a gun on him, being like, halt, and we're calling the police or security in an anarcho-capitalist world that we want to build towards or whatever, there would be some justification. But then, like, now they have them, like, they're chasing the boy down. you know, some obvious rednecks. These dudes are rednecks. As a redneck, I can say there's some rednecks chasing this black boy down, probably scaring the shit out of him. And he decided to, you know, like, not comply with these guys' vigilantism. And they had a tussle for the gun, and the dude shot him. And then the cops kind of came up there very callously. I think they kind of watched the kid die. Did not seem like anybody really cared. Maybe he was already dead. I'm not sure. There's a lot of conflicting information coming out, but it don't look good for those dudes. And I haven't seen anybody really happy with it. The district attorney down here lost her election immediately afterwards because it came up that, like, you know, good old boy system type stuff was going on. I think the dude that shot him, his father was like, he might not have been a cop, but he was some sort of,
I thought he was a retired cop or something like that. So
he was retired, yeah. Retired something with the police force. Maybe he was okay. A cop, a retired cop.
I thought it was a retired cop or retired sheriff, or I don't know. It was something like that. It's been a while since I looked at it, but
I'm pretty sure it wasn't a sheriff, but it was something involved with him. And that good old boy system, especially down here in the South, definitely needs to have a light shone on it.
Well, we don't want a society where people decide to act as judge, jury, and executioner. Like, that's just not the building blocks for a functional, you know, peaceful society. You know what I mean? Like, even if you have really strong, good reasons to believe that, oh, this is the person that committed the crime, it's like, there should be a process. And, you know, the idea of, like, innocent until proven guilty does have merit to it. So, like, even if, like, in your own head, it's like, I know this is the guy who took my TV, it's better for you to seek some kind of arbitration process, because then what happens is you show the community around you, hey, here's footage of this guy in my house, and you see he took my TV. And then, you know, after I showed this to my private dispute resolution organization that I have a contract with, you know, they contacted the dispute resolution organization that this guy is contracted with. And so they reached out to him and scheduled an audit, and, you know, he had to consent to it because it was part of the contract, and they found the TV, and it's, you know, I got the receipt for the TV, and here's, so, like, you show that body of evidence to a third party arbitrator, who then goes, yeah, this body of evidence demonstrates that, you know, Liam took Reed's TV. And so, you know, and then, you know, it issues a resolution where, like, okay, you got to give the TV back, plus pay the court fees, plus probably pay some sort of, you know, slight compensation to Reed for the trouble that you've caused him. Like, that's the kind of way we want situations like that to be handled. It's just not, you know, like, I'm all for, you know, I'm a gun owner. I'm all for self-defense. And it's a different situation. Like, it's completely different than, like, listen, if I'm sleeping in my bed tonight and I hear a window break in, yeah, I'm probably going to go down with, you know, my AR-15 and be a little bit more, ready to defend myself and use lethal force than I would if it was something like after the, because you don't know in the middle of the night why somebody's breaking into your house and they can pose a threat to you. But there's just, we have to recognize different situations are different. You know what I mean? Like, we can't just extrapolate out and oversimplify things.
I would be going with the sword of the spirit and the shield of faith and the helmet of salvation. No, I'm just kidding. I had to give you shit there. Sorry.
If you drink poison, you won't die. And if you, I forget all the tests that Jesus said, like, you know, it's a sign of my believers that they'll be able to do all these things.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
what really pisses me off is, you know, everything is over racialized. So obviously Kyle Rittenhouse, he shot those, whether or not he's a white supremacist, which I've never seen any reason to think he is. He shot those people in self-defense. Derek Chauvin with George Floyd, that was obviously not a racist move. I mean, I think they used to be co-workers, and he even had one of the cops that was standing next to him was Asian. And there's no reason to think any of that was racially charged. So when the media overly racializes everything, it loses its potency. Like, when there actually is something that could be racially charged, I don't know about you guys, but I'm just automatically skeptical now whenever I hear that.
Well, it makes me really angry, because what you end up getting from that is then the conservative response, which is, well, let's look at the actual statistics. And then they start to make statistical arguments about, you know, why the criminal justice system isn't racist, when you could just skip that argument entirely and just say, well, the thing is that people are getting killed by cops, right? And white people and black people get killed by cops. Like, if leftists really wanted to have the best strategy, they would just skip the racial element altogether and just say white people are getting killed too, just to avoid the conservative argument, which is like, they point to statistics, and you don't even have to get involved in that. You can just skip it entirely.
Yeah, Dave Smith made the same point on Joe Rogan's podcast back in 2020, where it was like, if Black Lives Matter actually wanted to make progress on police accountability and criminal justice reform, they wouldn't have named their organization Black Lives Matter. It would have been like Accountability for Killer Cops, or something like that. Like, but when they call it Black Lives Matter, it's inherently going to, you know, it's just human nature. You're going to provoke a reactionary response. I personally tried not to do that, and I tried to sort of work with Black Lives Matter at first. But then even then, like, if you saw it evolve, at the beginning, they were much more reasonable and approachable. But over time, that movement just became more and more racialized, more and more about identity politics, more and more about left versus right. And it became less about actually dealing with the issues. And so on both ends, it just, you know, it's part of this problem with the left overall, which is just playing in identity politics, which are just completely toxic.
Do you think the way, like, Black Lives Matter went that direction, like, whatever, the movement? I agree with you on the name. It's needlessly divisive. But, do you think, like, it went that way because of the people that were actually in the movement, or do you think it was kind of the corporate press moved it in that direction to kind of maybe? I have it, like, I'm always seeing this right left narrative kind of really pushed by those in power, and I think it, like, they try to divide it on race, they try to divide it on religion, all that kind of stuff, and just the culture war pushing it on us, or pushing on everybody. It's almost like a trap. Like, when we're sitting here starting to talk about ending the wars, ending the drug war, economic policy, all this shit that I think all of our logical minds can point to obvious solutions for that, then we start arguing over racism or college, you know, critical race theory, transgender issues, all this kind of stuff that is just, it's obviously right versus left, and people just divide up in these camps. Do you think, just my question, do y'all think that's Black Lives Matter, the organization, is it their fault, or is it the fault of the people that tell us about them?
a lot of people who's you could blame. I mean, the media for one, but really this all can be traced back to the universities, I think, primarily, because that's where a lot of these ideas originated. And then they've been weaponized by politicians and the media to frame our political dialogue in our country along those lines.
So with Black Lives Matter and like everything that was going, sorry to cut you off there, but with everything that was going on last summer or last spring, summer, I was actually sympathetic toward a lot of the people, because even though an organization like Black Lives Matter can be corrupt, I think that a lot of the people who are involved are not corrupt. You know, like it was kind of dumb what Joe Jorgensen said about the movement versus the organization, but there's a little bit of truth to that too. Like, not everybody in an organization is like the corporate overlords of it. You know, like there are people in the Republican Party who are good. There are people in the Democrat Party who are good. It's just like the Libertarian Party. Like, we see there are a bunch of shit bags running it sometimes, but a lot of the people in it really care about things. So I don't think like writing off the entirety of all the people who, you know, were at the protests or care about police brutality or care about racism or whatever, I don't think that's smart. So I actually went there in, I think it was in June. It's in Denver. I went to a big protest and I walked around and I talked to like 100 people and I was asking them, you're all saying no justice, no peace. You got to describe justice to me so we can achieve peace. Like, you got to know what you want. And none of them did. And, you know, the chaos just got worse and worse, and the looting and everything just got worse and worse. And then we had what happened in Kenosha happen eventually. And I ended up like losing sympathy for any of the people that I initially cared about. Because initially I was like, yeah, there's some people who really care about this. But if you're in a movement and you're not willing to like stand up and say, hey, we need to say what we stand for and we need to actually try to facilitate change, if you're just going to let your movement kind of devolve into chaos, like I think that did, then I just like don't really have any use for you anymore. So I think like by August last year, I was just like, fuck all these people. I don't even care. I mean, maybe that wasn't the right reaction. I think maybe the initial reaction was better, trying to realize it's a group full of individuals and some of these people really care, but there are just so few of them that seem to actually be demanding anything.
Where they really lost me was just their unwillingness to, you know, loudly condemn the violent elements that would break out in their protests. And it's like, you know, I mean, just think about it. Like, if the Mises Caucus, if we organized some kind of protest or rally and then a riot happened afterwards, like, none of us here and none of the leadership of the Mises Caucus anywhere would have any trouble, you know, the next day putting out really strong statements condemning, like, hey, like, we showed up to do a peaceful protest and then some idiots showed up and started rioting and looting. And we strongly condemn that. And that's not us.
But I would say, I think there are very good people on both sides.
So. Yeah. Well, I mean, like, sometimes when you're in them positions, it's kind of hard to condemn your allies or whatever. Not even your allies, but just people you're sympathetic with. Because, like, you could look at some of them situations where violence did break out. And it wasn't necessarily like the Black Lives Matter side starting it. Could have been a counter protest or cops or something, not defending at all. Some of the stuff
I'm sympathetic to the idea that perhaps sometimes there were, you know, cops maybe, or, you know, undercover people that might've been trying to, you know, instigate that stuff. It's certainly possible.
Do y'all remember like the pallets of rocks or like just being left around? Like, yep. There were pallets of rocks being left around the cities and stuff like that. That's weird shit. And I don't know. I mean, my mind always just goes to like, how are the people that are, you know, like cops in a situation, like it would benefit them for it to be rioting and this kind of stuff to justify their existence or building up their institutions and that kind of stuff. But I mean, like, that's not to defend any of it. Like, the stuff going on in Kenosha when, like, Kyle Rittenhouse and his group of people decided to go in there and defend their town, that was getting out of hand. Like, they were burning private businesses down, like, destroying property and stuff. That's easy to condemn, but then there's, you know, there's just like a lot of gray areas.
I know, but it's just you can't let that narrative get away from you because, you know, think about it. This was in the context of also the mask mandates and the lockdowns. And conservatives were starting to get super red-pilled on cops for the first time. I mean, they were going to parks and having cops show up and arresting mothers for taking their children to parks. You know, people being arrested for going out and just driving, leaving their homes. And a lot of right-wingers were going like, no, like, fuck this. Like, you know, we've been, you know, we've been the thin blue line for a long time, but we're not going to stand for this. But then when a movement that's about, you know, yeah, it's Black Lives Matter, but they're protesting police brutality and police shootings and saying defund the police. And then riots break out and they're so reluctant to, I'm not saying there weren't individual people, but for the most part, the overall, like, even like, so my sister's a big part of the Black Lives Matter movement and stuff. And she was always like, would never talk about it and just be like, oh, well, why do you care more about private property being burned down than Black lives? Like, that was the typical run of the mill response you got. And it's like, well, no, like, it's not an either or. It's people who are shot by cops, they matter. Black lives matter. Black people have been oppressed by our, you know, country, by our government historically, and we can acknowledge all that. And we can also say that it's wrong to go around and burn down buildings, a lot of which, by the way, were owned by Black people. there's a lot of Black business owners that had their shit burned down.
There's nothing that shows that you're angry that a Black man was killed in Minneapolis, like burning down a small business in Wisconsin, that really like drives that message home. But yeah, I thought it was what was going on was a clear display of anarcho-tyranny. So you have like a government in place, but it's not doing anything to keep order or protect innocent people. All it's doing is provoking that, like you're talking about, Will, like you saw the pallets of bricks and stones being laid out everywhere. And, you know, I went to this thing in Denver, and while there were, you know, the protest was like 100% peaceful, I felt like the only time the media would show something was when it was really bad. And then they were also simultaneously describing it as nothing, like they were trying to invoke outrage. Like they'd say, fiery but mostly peaceful protest and show a building on fire. They'd never show like an actual peaceful protest and what was going on there. It was always the turmoil and then act like they were thinking that there wasn't turmoil. And then, you know, when you, I forget the couple's name who had the AR-15 and the pistol outside when everyone was coming in their front yard, like they get in trouble for protecting their property, or Kyle Rittenhouse gets, you know, fucked over for self-defense. Like they're incentivizing you to be terrified and desire the federal stormtroopers to come in and lock down the city. Like I felt like that was the entire incentive being provoked there. Like, I mean, I feel like that was what the media was doing. Like everyone was trying to act like the media was making you hate cops. I felt like it was the opposite. Actually, the media was making you like beg for the cops to go in and, you know, destroy the unrest. Exactly. And I don't know, like that was what I picked up on it. Like it was a very clever manipulation to terrify everybody into wanting more authoritarianism. And I don't think it was accidental.
No, because the conservatives were like, hey, oh wait, this is why we need cops.
Yeah. Well, I think all of this, even the Kyle Rittenhouse stuff, comes back to the media where it's literally just all about what they magnify. Like if they really cared, the Rand Paul and Justin Amash bills that they introduced would have been the biggest thing that entire time. I mean, the libertarians were the only ones who introduced pieces of legislation that would have addressed any of this, and the media just didn't magnify it. Instead, they magnified like this, the Kyle Rittenhouse case instead of the Ahmaud Arbery case. It's just, where are they putting their magnifying glass? They're capable of doing it. They're capable of setting a narrative, but they don't, and they're very irresponsible with it.
even like right now, they're focusing on Rittenhouse, not Aubrey. It was like, remember when they were focusing on the George Zimmerman case and like the Trayvon Martin, not that that wasn't a whole thing, but it was one, it was a trial where people could pick one side or the other. But the same time, somewhere else in America, I think the kid's name was Tamir Rice, like a little 12-year-old playing with a pop gun, and cops shot the kid. There's no way you could sit there and have like, no, you're everybody's boomer Fox News loving uncle would be on the side of, no, you, that's gross and egregious and somebody needs to pay. But the media ignores that and focuses on the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman, not saying that's clear cut or anything, but they focus on the stuff that makes us all fight each other.
Right. Yeah. And this is kind of like going into also like what Reed and I were talking about earlier today when like Reed was, you had Andrew from Popular Liberty on your show the other night. And then we've had some conversations since then. And there's this problem in like on all sides, even in liberty circles, where people get caught up identifying what they are by what they hate, and becoming just everything that they do is defined by what they hate, and what, you know, we can't do what our, you know, we have to be the opposite of what these people are, and everyone has it, you know, there's always a them and we have to stop them. And what pisses me off the most about all of this is that it's like, especially when libertarians do it, is like you're becoming, in my opinion, useful idiots for the state, for the duopoly, because they love when you focus on these dumb culture wars. It doesn't mean I don't have problems with the radical left. It doesn't mean as a Christian I don't share some of those criticisms about things that are going on at the cultural level. But, you know, I still want to deal with those things, but I have to deal with them in a way that's not just reactionary and not let those things turn me into a worse version of myself where I'm not operating through, you know, like evaluating my decision-making based upon some kind of like sound epistemology where I'm judging the, you know, like I'm hypothesizing an idea and seeing if it works and like, you know, like being rational. And instead, you know, when we give up being rational for being reactionary, it's a slippery slope into a lot of bad things.
Yeah, that's like, I feel like if you only focus on what you hate, then you miss the importance of what's actually happening in the present. So if you are just a contrarian and you just hate the left, or you just hate the right, like we got plenty of those people in the Libertarian Party, then you miss out on important opportunities where people are right about an issue. So like, you know, a lot of the left was right about police brutality last year. I don't think that was something we should have ignored, but it's the nuance of rejecting, you know, the like, I don't think Black Lives Matter actually cares about police brutality. I think it's mostly about federalizing the police at this point. It seems like that's what their goal actually is. So you can reject that while still pointing out that, no, you know, the problem isn't that we have, for instance, you could say the problem isn't that we have racist cops. The problem is the cops have too much power. And that's kind of how you can diffuse a culturally charged issue. You know, go after the centralized power that's there that shouldn't exist. I think that's the same thing with critical race theory. Like, you know, a lot of people are up in arms about it, and it's like, yeah, well, the problem here is that the federal government is dictating what we teach to our children instead of you being able to choose what school your kid goes to, you know, or having a more localized Department of Education, at least, instead of a federal one. With all these issues, you can kind of diffuse the extreme religious anger that's festering between sides and be like, look, the problem is you guys are trying to exert power over each other. That's why this issue exists in the first place. Like, reduce that power, decentralize it, and this issue goes away. I feel like that's a pretty good universal approach to almost all of these things.
Yeah, I agree. And to me, it's like, the danger is that when you focus on what you hate, it's really easy to your praxis isn't being guided by principles, and we see a lot of people, and I know we pick on the Praxians a lot here, but it's not even just the Praxians. You see this happen with a lot of left libertarians too, where they become okay with state programs as long as they're targeted towards right wingers. So it's like we have to stay away from that, because there is no state solution to the, like, it's not only that there isn't a state solution to the culture war. I think the culture war is basically a product of the state. Like, I do not think that if we actually eliminated the state, that these cultures would be at odds as much as they are. I'm not saying they would perfectly get along, but it's a lot easier to just disassociate with people than it is to try to, you know, erect some kind of structure to dominate the other group and force them into compliance with your worldview. But I mean, it's we have to, in my opinion, try to, as libertarians, our goal is to try to de-escalate the culture war and to point out the true source of the problems. Like the problem with income inequality isn't that there are, you know, filthy right wingers who are racist. The problem with income inequality is that our monetary policy and the Federal Reserve and bailouts for corporations and big bankers. You know what I mean? It's like, it's, I don't know. I'll stop ranting.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And the FBI keeps cutting off Will whenever he's about to say something important. But Scott Horton and Dave talk about this. It's a circular thing. That idea that politics downstream from culture is only half true. It goes both ways. Like, culture is also downstream of politics. And I think that, you know, one area where I disagree with Andrew from Popular Liberty is that I don't think that this amount of power is actually desired by most people. Like, I think that we have an unnatural amount of centralized power, and that most people don't like it and they don't want it. I don't think it would just naturally get here. That's kind of the idea behind my show, is that, like, we need to go back to, I don't know if you guys would agree with this, but I actually think, like, a Darwinian society would be more merciful at this point. Like, we've gotten to the point where we're elevating a certain class of people to rule over us that don't deserve to be there. And if we had a little bit more of a survival of the fittest mentality when it comes to government or when it comes to society, that we wouldn't be elevating these people to be in charge of us. I don't know what you think about that, but we've basically removed, you know, we've removed any incentive for successful people to rise, because we just, like, are uplifting the scum of society. And I'm talking about like the political elite class. Like, they have their power because, you know, they just siphon it off of us. Like, they don't naturally gain it anymore. And I feel like we've just become desensitized to that whole process. And we need to get back to a place where it is more capitalist and more self-sustaining and, you know, just more competitive. I don't know what you guys think about that, but.
Well, you talk about that Darwinian, like, survival of the fittest, and where that could absolutely be applied is, like, in our economic policy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, like, you know, anarcho-capitalism to a T right there is just, like, allowing
capitalism is pretty Darwinian. Like,
the, yeah, exactly. Of, like, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, the our economies, you know, it is the way it is because of the Federal Reserve and because of the way that, like, they've controlled, just like trying to control human action as far as economic anything. I think pretty much libertarianism explains this. Like, we should be trusting in human action and the free market to, like, solve itself instead of trying to control all this stuff. And that's kind of, like, a big problem with the whole populist liberty guy, Andrew. He's like, or all the Praxians, they're like, they are bringing out, like, they want to control society. They want to move it into the direction that they like. And that's not very libertarian. We might be allies with them in some things.
There's the FBI again cutting them off.
See, this is anytime we start talking about the Praxians is when Will gets cut off. So I mean, you know,
Keith is an FBI agent and he's just like, fuck you, Will.
Crap, I had something I was gonna say, but I brain farted when Will popped out. You have anything?
Will, what were you saying? It looked
I'm
like
back. I don't know where y'all lost me.
You got most of the way through it. We just lost you for like the last 2 seconds there.
Well, my main point is just like libertarianism is about rejecting that power of the state, and that's what we should be working towards. Like we all have these different things where we're not necessarily 100% libertarian in our thinking. But in regard to like where we are libertarians, like where we're speaking publicly as libertarians, we don't need to be talking about tax policy that's going to be investing in the stock market and that kind of stuff. I think it just rubs me the wrong way, especially like the stuff that talking about controlling society or the elements of degenerate society that we don't like or they don't like.
It's almost like, and I read you've had Andrew on your show. Liam, have you had Andrew on your show?
I've talked to him? Andrew, but yeah. We're going to redo the podcast.
Yeah, because I have him coming on the end of the month. But
they dropped the N-word too much in it, so they're going to reshoot it.
That's exactly it.
No, they didn't drop it enough. That's the problem.
Same things are best for Tower Gang guys.
Yeah. but my analysis, and I don't know if it makes sense, but maybe you guys can tell me if it does. It almost feels like Andrew and the Praxians are trying to centrally plan society from the bottom up. It's like, it's weird. It's counterintuitive. It's like, they're not trying to take over the federal government and like centrally plan from the top down. But I think, and maybe this is like Andrew's personality and Peach too, where it's like, it's almost, I know Andrew is like an engineer, I believe. And I think this is like engineers sometimes overestimate their ability to like, you know, well, if I do this, this will happen. And like, they don't think about all the ways in which things might not go according to their plan.
But all I can say is fuck engineers, having been a blue collar worker, having to assemble things on the other end. And you're right. Like, arguing with someone like 7 states away from you who's like, yeah, the bolt will fit. And it's like, dude, it's 6 inches off. I'm like, no, it isn't on my computer screen. So I just had to get that in there.
Fuck it. Well, I'm a transmission rebuilder, and I spend every day not only cursing out engineers, but fixing the shit that they didn't get right. So exactly. I have a very red-pilled perspective on how, you know, hard it is to engineer things. And I think the problem is the Praxians feel like they can, through local politics and some kind of like weird grassroots social engineering and all these different things, they can like, it's like they can perfectly manipulate circumstances to affect the outcome, to create the outcomes that they want. And it's like, I just feel like they're overly confident in their ability to do that. And it's also, it's like, I don't want to spend that kind of energy into trying to do that, not even just from a libertarian perspective, but as a Christian. I just don't see that in the Bible. I don't see anywhere where Jesus told me to obsess with trying to kick the degenerates out of my community. You know what I mean? Like, if anything, it's almost the opposite. Jesus hung out with sinners so much that he was accused of being a degenerate. It's like, yeah. look at this Jesus guy. He's hanging out with, I always love, my favorite thing about this is that they go, he hangs out with sinners and tax collectors, as if it's like, it's the tax collector part where he goes too far, right?
Yeah. I mean, well, I would agree. I prefer degenerates to tax collectors. So
you had to pick. Hey, so like that's the point on like the all these Praxians, they're all Christian guys and stuff, and
I'll just say a couple of them I don't think are even Christians. They're just utilitarians with their religion.
Christian. Sure, but they're claiming Christianity, and like, you know, we are what we claim to be.
I disagree with that, but go on.
Well, you know, like we talk about, you know, like we're all, I don't know where Liam stands, but we're all kind of like agnostic. Like we call ourselves agnostic. You would say that is in the realm of like all believers are agnostic, right? In to a regard when they think about it. I think all atheists are agnostic, that kind of thing. But back to my point, they seem to like be really trying to push Christian ideals and Christian morality into like their whole praxian outline for what we need to be doing. And they're speaking in libertarian spaces, and they seem to be rejecting the similarities Christianity has between. Damn it, am I losing?
You weren't, and then you were.
Well, you gotta like set it right with the FBI, whatever they're doing. You're back now. You're moving again. So,
I think I know the argument that you're, or the question that you're trying to ask. And honestly, like when they use Christian arguments, at least some of them, I see it more like the right using Christian arguments to argue for like allying with Israel or something like that. It's not necessarily like core Christianity. It just seems to be like the first thing that the devil says in the Bible is like, did God really say that? Like, it's like essentially twisting God's words, using actual things found in the Bible, and then arguing against the Bible.
Using God's name in vain, other words.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, I was getting to that point and the internet cut me off. Damn it.
maybe it's God. God doesn't want some filthy degenerate like Will spouting off biblical principles. It's a heresy.
Hell, Satan! Ah! Every time I start to get real eloquent and get in my groove, I lose my internet.
Yeah,
they're just trying to make you look bad, man.
Exactly. Yeah, it's something like they it's almost like something that's really like I view the Bible as true. I view it as the word of God. But when you take parts of the Bible out of context and bastardize them, you almost make them evil. You know what I mean? Like things taken out of like the Bible's kind of supposed to be read as a grand narrative from start to finish. And it's almost like, I mean, there's more obvious examples of this. Like if somebody goes, you know, and only reads up until like they stop a couple of verses too soon in the Abraham story where Abraham takes his son Isaac to go sacrifice him. You know what I mean? Like they'll come away with a really warped understanding of what the lesson of that story was supposed to be.
Is that what I did?
Yeah.
Shit, I gotta go read it again.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, it's like you have to make sure you read the whole thing and read the whole thing in context. And also like each book of the Bible sort of has this weird tension and interaction with each other. And you have to approach it with a bit of humility and to not, you know, quote scripture casually and out of context, which a lot of people do. And it's one of my biggest pet peeves. And I try not to do that. And I've had complaints on my show. It's like, you don't quote the Bible enough. It's like, it's because I don't know how to, because I don't want to be that guy who just cites two verses to prove a point. It's like, if I'm going to cite the Bible, you're going to have to sit down for 5 minutes while I read you like five chapters and then cross-reference it with a bunch of other passages in the Bible just to kind of like demonstrate I'm doing a proper exegesis and not just cherry picking what I want.
You know how I knew that Trump hadn't read the Bible? I mean, it's obvious for a lot of reasons, but one of the biggest, you know, when they asked him what his favorite book was, didn't he say 2 Corinthians or something like that? Or that he was talking about, I mean, if Donald Trump had read the Bible, I think we all know which book would be his favorite. It would have been Nehemiah. There's no doubt. And anyone who knows the Bible knows why. So, I mean, come on. Like, that's obviously.
Go and build me a wall.
Exactly. I mean, come on.
Donald Trump's like bullshitting about the Bible was my favorite thing about him. Like,
you know what's funny about the Nehemiah story, though, with that, is that Nehemiah proves that anarchy is better than statism, because Trump tried to use the state to build a wall and failed. Nehemiah used anarchy and they built the wall in quicker than what they were supposed to.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, I know Liam's got to get going here sort of soon. So I don't know. I guess we'll just wrap the conversation up. But what do you guys I guess we'll just close with this. It seems like, you know, we beat the Loser Brigade and the Pragmatist Caucus dissolved and goes away. And then from there on, the sectarianism just has to increase. Like, it's just got to keep breaking apart. Right now it's religion. Then it's going to be like Baptist versus Catholics. And then it's going to be like Pentecostals versus, you know, more traditional. Because I mean, it seems like it's just going to keep breaking up. So what do we do? What do we do to fight that? And Liam, you haven't talked much. So why don't you, what do you think? What can we do to prevent that from continuing to happen?
I mean, I think it really goes back to what you guys were talking about earlier, is just trying to identify where we agree on things. I mean, that really is what libertarianism is. It's just identifying these core principles where if we follow them, we can get along and live in a peaceful society. It's like, we all believe in this classical liberal ideal. We all want to get to that point. So I don't know why we're fighting each other. We should be fighting the state. We should be fighting exactly what we're arguing against. And I really do think that it has to go back to this thing that Jacob and I pointed out last time, which is just, why not both? Why not just try to decentralize? Why not try to have like this opportunity cost? Like, we can all do what we specialize in. So I think that that's what I would suggest.
I'm going to be completely like, we talked a little bit of shit about the Praxians and all, but I think what they want to do is go into the GOP and infiltrate that. And that's probably for the best. Their ideas and the things that they're willing to like to compromise in libertarian ideals are would probably best be fit in that sphere, and we can be their allies and wanting to end the wars and enact Austrian economic policies, and then like hopefully the Loser Brigade and the Pragmatists that we run off or don't run, you know, if we run them off, they go into the Democratic Party and maybe bring some libertarian ideals there. You know, like people like Bill Weld, he's terrible and stuff, but there is some libertarianism there. So wherever like all of these assholes end up, maybe they'll infect them with some of the stuff. And we can utilize, we can stand here in our ivory tower of libertarianism and tell them like they're all wrong and this is what they got to do to get our votes, or we'll just vote for Dave Smith.
I'm wondering exactly, I don't think that running like a Dave Smith or a messenger in the LP is necessarily contradictory with joining your local GOP, because the truth is if Dave does a good job of getting up there and spreading a good message, what's going to happen is either the GOP is going to outright reject the Libertarian Party and any liberty message. And then at that point, they're going to want to leave the GOP because they're absolutely opposed to libertarianism. Or Dave is going to actually set a narrative. The GOP is going to accept it and actually buy into those arguments. And then you can use that in the local GOP. But it really depends on where you're at. Like, different counties are going to receive the LP better than they would the GOP. And I think that we really just need to try both and see what works.
Yeah, we need to be attacking from multiple fronts. And I do want to quickly point out that the only monologue Will has gotten off without interruption is where he praised Bill Weld a little bit. So
no! That's a little... Dude, that was a Gary Johnson stan for 10 years. There's plenty of Bill Weld praise that I regret highly in my past.
I know. Yeah.
It's like one of them things that you kind of like learn more and more about as you kind of like halfway are in there. And man, by the time I voted for him, but it was just like, by the time we got there, it was just like, I guess.
Well, yeah. And you know, I try to be consistent with, you know, calling everybody out.
Jacob voted for Bernie Sanders when you were considering voting for Bill.
Oh, it's worse. I voted for Bernie Sanders and then I voted for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, that's way worse than Bill. Yeah.
My voting record.
Get him off the stream.
Yeah.
Get him off.
Just when people don't believe, like, people don't believe me sometimes because of how conservative I am now when I tell them I was a full blown leftist. But yeah, I was.
I was a neocon, so, you know, amazing. The people probably wouldn't believe that for the most part. So,
although I could make joke, like, I was a leftist, but I voted for a neocon when I voted for Hillary Clinton. So, I mean.
And for Bernie Sanders. You voted for a neocon then, too.
When I was 18, I did vote for John McCain. But
that might be worse.
Yeah, that's worse. You've got the worst.
Worse than Hillary? I don't know. Worse than Hillary Clinton? I don't know.
That is
a maverick.
One.
I dressed up as Donald Trump for like the Halloween thing we did at our school, and I actually went up on stage. And this is a photo of me. I just pulled it up. I won. I took first place, and like this was, I was actually. This is so terrible. I celebrated like the bombing of, I think it was Afghanistan when they dropped the Moab. Like that was huge. Yeah, a month later, it was like.
How old are you, Leon?
21.
God damn it.
It took like a month, though. And then it was kind of just this shock because literally a month later, I looked back and I was like, holy crap, why did I support that?
Jacob, how old are you, man?
29.
I'm on the lower half of the age bracket here. I didn't realize that. I'm a couple years younger than Jacob, so.
Yeah. Well, the last thing I wanted to say was, you know, I try to be consistent with calling out like everybody to try to like focus on fighting the state more than fighting each other. And I've even pointed my guns at Dave Smith before. Like he upset me a little bit back in when Spike and Joe were running with how hard he went after that bad tweet, which the anti-racist tweet, and it was a bad tweet, no question about it. But I was just like, hey, like this is way better than Gary Johnson and Bill Weld. So let's count our blessings a bit and like, you know, critique them, but also like maybe not shit on them as much as you are.
That's how I became friends with Dave Smith, by telling him that he was sucked by being too hard on Gary.
That's weird. That's how I became friends with him too. Was actually I called him a crybaby, and then somehow we ended up private messaging after that. And then like I apologized for calling him a crybaby. I was like, I should have just.
I was teaming up on him with a bunch of guys, and then he ended up like engaging us. And then we ended up having him on my podcast and talking it out, and we became friends.
Dave models that you know, like he models that Jesus teaching of turning the other cheek pretty well. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like people come after him and then he just turns the other cheek and extends a hand out and in friendship. And I love Dave, and like, you know, it's not like I ever went after him and was like the Loser Brigade people and like had my, you know, was gone off the rails crazy. Like, you know, I mean, Dave's kind of what brought me here, but it's like
the only guy I turn the other cheek for is Clint.
So wait, is the key to like meeting Dave and like talking to him just talking shit about him first?
Pretty much.
I've been a fucking fan for like a decade, and I'm over here, you know, I see how it is. I'm gonna start talking shit about his comedy. Big J's way funnier than you, Dave, and the more you lean into Christianity, the less funny Legion of Skanks becomes. Get out.
All right, well, let's do plugs. So you can follow me on Twitter now. I'm at NaturalistCap, and I've got my link tree in the description there. I now have that on my YouTube channel, too, so you can follow me everywhere, Instagram, Anchor, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Odyssey. Just follow me everywhere because I don't know which platforms I'm still going to be on forever. And I would recommend everybody diversify. I put all my eggs in, not in one basket, but two baskets. And one of those baskets got crushed and then they broke an egg in the other basket. So I got kind of nervous, which is YouTube. So just, be smart, diversify, get people to follow you everywhere. But, Will, why don't you plug your luscious wine for us? It's a good show.
How far did you get down today?
I'm down to, this was full when we started, and I'm down to here. So
you see, you got to work, man. You got to get work towards this. But yeah, if anybody's interested in the best blueberry wine in the world, I swear by it. If you find another, let me know. This is Rabbit Eye Wine. Go to rabbiteyewine.com to check it out. If you're interested, please buy it. And I want to start a campaign to get me in charge of the Georgia Mises Caucus Twitter. So let's figure that out. And
we can all Israel post together and drive everyone nuts.
I'll be good and edgy enough to get us like some traction. y'all help me out.
All right, Liam.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at @mliammccullum. Oh, am I cutting out?
Oh, you almost did. The FBI was trying, but they failed. So
yeah, and then follow me at the Liam McCullum Show on YouTube and Odyssey. I'm also on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. I hope to be interviewing Dave soon. We said that we would do it in November, but I haven't scheduled anything yet. That's the next big thing coming up.
Yeah, same actually. I'm going to be having Dave on sometime in the next, 2 to 3 weeks at some point. That's when we'll complete his conversion. We'll do his baptism live on air. No, I'm just kidding. you can follow me on Twitter at Biblical Anarchy. Podcast is pretty much anywhere you could find it. YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all that stuff. Just search Daniel 3 Biblical Anarchy, or you can find all of that on my website, which is Daniel318.com.
Hey, Dan, Jacob, before we, your last name, is that like Wino something?
It's Winograd, which means grape in Russian.
That's what I thought. I thought it had a derivative of some kind of wine.
Yeah, it means grape or like wine. It means like
wine enthusiast.
Yeah, it was like I forget the exact thing, but like something about like fruit of the vine or what. Basically, my ancestors probably made wine. So
right on, bro.
You guys were meant to get along together. Although he wasn't quite enough of a wine enthusiast to get it to him by.
Yeah, you didn't quite. Well, you lost faith in the free market pretty quick, man.
Listen, I take my alcohol very seriously. Almost as, you know what I mean? I mean, Jesus literally turned water into wine. So, I mean, it's a pretty good reason to be an alcoholic, I guess.
Well, next capitalist commune, we'll all kick it off with all a glass of Rabbit Eye Wine.
Sounds good.
All right, guys, thanks for watching. I will be live streaming a couple times this week. The next Four Horsemen is on Sunday, a week from today, so check in for that.